Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining future of education, one inspired story at a time. Today I actually have a really interesting topic to discuss with you, and that is the history of circles in our human cultures. Circle time and the use of circles is actually really valuable when it comes to education and learning, and it's something that's been steeped in our history across the planet for many, many years, you know, millennia really, when you think about it. But it has got me thinking, why are we not necessarily using them to the best advantage, I suppose, these days? Particularly in Western societies, lots of children sit in desks. Some desks might be in groups, but in general, they're sitting in rows. Children are sitting in rows in classrooms. And very often, we don't get to have circle time unless you're sitting around a campfire at a school camp, something like that. So early childhood, I guess, sit in circles at some stage. But as a general rule, it's just not something that's done very often anymore. So I wanted to bring it up today for the conversation because there's a lot of power in using circles, basically. So I'm going to start with talking very briefly about the history of circles, and I'll go just very briefly, and then I would like to share some activities for anyone who would like to play and explore in this space on the uses of circles in learning and education settings and the sorts of things that adults and mentors can do, teachers can do, if it's something that you're interested in exploring at the same time. So that's pretty much where our conversation's going to go today. And as usual, I've written an article, which I will publish. There's always a part of article every week with activities or resources, and that will be published today as well, called The Power of Circles. So if you're interested in going in deeper, of course, you can go to bbs.com/ All Learning Reimagined, and that's where you can find all the archive shows and all of the articles and resources that I create each week. Okay, so let's get started. Well, as you know, I'm in Australia, so I'm going to start with the Aborigines, the Aboriginal people in Australia, who have used circles as a central part of their culture, really. I mean, they use centrals, you know, yarning circles, ceremony circles, talking about song lines, and they've used them for conflict resolution as well. But a yarning circle really allows participants to speak without interruption, and it builds that connection and that understanding, that inner standing with everybody who's sitting in the circle and participating. And the elders often used circles to teach law, not necessarily L-A-W, it's L-O-R-E, so law, through story time, their kinship, of course, and their culture, and that connection to land and country. So it was also a time to share and connect, the elders sharing and connecting with responsibilities. And it's pretty much ingrained in our Aboriginal culture. And I know that there are a lot of schools in Australia who have built and have got yarning circles. But my question to those schools are, how often are they actually being used? There are some beautiful places that are being built and they're there, but are they being utilised to the best that they can be? Excuse me. Goodness gracious. Of course, Native American, First Nations in Canada and the US Also have lots of talking circles supported by community decision making, lots of spiritual ceremony, just beautiful and healing. And the research that I found there actually talked about the fact that they use things like a talking stick or a talking feather, which ensures that one voice can be heard at a time. And whilst that's nothing new, it is something that a lot of people might have forgotten about. You know, sometimes using a talking stick or a feather or even perhaps a special rock, it doesn't mean it's something that's steeped in nature that can be passed around from speaker to speaker. Allowing that connection is a really lovely way to promote that non-hierarchical leadership and that that collective responsibility, which is something that I really felt strongly when I was researching the Native American area and how they used circles, which is it was really, really embedded in their culture and still is, of course. Now, my neighbours in New Zealand, Aotearoa, beautiful Maori people, also have meetings. They have lots of participants in circular or semicircular arrangements, and they like to reflect, you know, relationships and care and that collective voice. And they have restorative circles, which are really central to contemporary Maori informed school practices. So the restorative circles that they use are beautiful. And I urge anyone who hasn't heard of them or was interested in investigating them to go and check out what they're doing because it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing how they get children to sit in that circle to truly discuss from that heart space, getting out of the mind into the heart space and making those connections. And then I'm going to jump to our last society, because I could keep going because they're pretty much in all societies across the planet, would be the Africans. Many, many tribes in Africa are gathered in circles under it, usually under a central tree. To discuss disputes or make decisions. And that gathering is also that communal harmony and that, I guess, patient listening or consensus with whatever it is that they're discussing in their societies as well. And all of this seems to link back to a lot of the ancient civilizations. If you're looking at ancient Greece, you know, their civic dialogues and philosophical discussions, I should say. They take place in circular formations. And it really symbolized equality during a debate in back in ancient Greece, of course. The Celtic and Norse traditions had councils and gatherings, and they often used circular seating to allow that equitable dialogue. And of course, the medieval, you know, Knights of the Round Table is one of the first things that you think of. But the chapter houses in a lot of the monasteries were intentionally circular, or really like an octagon, some of them, for the monks to discuss and matters as equals as well. So it's sort of you can feel the threads that are all over the planet of this power of the circle and how it's been utilized. And I'm really interested in looking at how can we use this in as a modern adaptation. There are pockets of places on the planet and beautiful men and women, mankind on the planet that are using this in such an amazing way. And yet, I discuss things with lots of people in lots of different countries. It feels to me like in our busy, busy lives today, the power of the circle is being undervalued and could possibly be dusted off and resurrected as something that is a wonderful tool to teach our children and to embed into our society and our way of life, rather than a hierarchical, I am the expert, sit down, do as you're told, I'm going to make decisions for you. And teaching them at a level or the young people at the level as they come up and they grow up, we don't want to lose the magic and the power of that collaboration and that harmony that you have, particularly with things like restorative justice circles, peer mediation, community circles in classrooms, of course, and you know, councils, those sorts of things are very, very powerful. Now, the circles actually work. When I did the research, I mean, I can guess, of course, but I wanted to do a little bit of research, which I always do for most shows. And I wanted to think about the psychology and the group dynamics is something that fascinates me because I've been working in education for well over 30 years and have used circles in many, many different ways, many of them discussed already. And there is a reason why they work. It's because it removes the hierarchy. Everybody is equally visible. And it's really important as an educator that you don't have someone that sits out of the circle and goes, oh no, I'm just going to sit in the corner. I'm just going to sit over here. If they're going to be part of the circle, they really need to be sitting in as part of the circle and feel comfortable. So it's allowing that space and how large the circle needs to be. Sometimes the circles can be too big. And voices cannot be heard. And sometimes that might be out of your control, depending on the size of the classroom or the size of the children, the amount of children that are there. I have at times had two circles, and each circle comes up with a decision, and then we come back as one large circle and then share what both circles decided themselves so that everybody could feel like they had a voice. And then each circle dedicated or designated or voted or volunteered, whatever, however they wanted to do, and chose the person that was going to speak on behalf of their circle. So that can be a topic or a strategy that you could use if you have a lot of people for the circle, and if you have some children who are uncomfortable sitting in a large circle. There's always a way around it. One of the other reasons why circles work, of course, is to reduce confrontation. Because see, people actually sit side by side, not in front of, not across from, which feels like that concentration, confrontation energetically and with the subconscious. So when you're sitting beside people and you have someone on their left and someone on the right, it does actually feel like it reduces that confrontation and that fight or flight unconscious response that can sometimes happen just doesn't. It just seems to really settle down. Circles also encourage empathy, and the body language can be seen by everybody. So you can see if someone's rolling their eyes. You can see if someone's feeling uncomfortable. You can see if someone's got a huge grin on their face because they're so happy. You can see if people are sitting up stronger because they're really listening or leaning forward because they're really listening. You can watch and you can feel the body language, which is important for children to be able to encourage and develop empathy. And this is a skill that personally, from my experience, I'm seeing is disappearing from our culture. And I do feel that possibly the breakdown in family time, sitting around a dinner table, or possibly the overuse of technology, even the use of Zoom, and platforms where you're talking online, but you're not actually face to face feeling someone's energy. And not really connecting in that space. So we're losing the skill of empathy. And we're out of practice. Many people are out of practice. So that's one of the other reasons why it would be valuable to have this, particularly right down from early childhood all the way through up into universities, including that circle time. Circles also increase accountability. Now, this is a really big one for me. I feel like accountability and responsibility is something that's often dished out but glossed over. It says, yes, we hold people responsible or accountable, but do they? And even better yet, do people hold themselves responsible and do they hold accountability for themselves? Because in order for us to govern our society, the first thing we have to do is govern ourselves, self-governance. So if you're sitting in a circle and you have everybody looking at you when you're talking and giving you their energy and their attention, participants will really feel responsible in that group setting. And it really does set that accountability, that we're all here to support each other, but we're all here checking up on each other, and your word is your bond. What you said you're going to do, everyone's there to witness it. So it's very up front and center, and it's a very gentle way to hold that accountability in a circle space. I really like it. I've seen it be very successful in this manner, and highly recommend it actually. One of the other reasons why circles work would be because it supports shared leadership. There's no person at the front of the room, which is what in Western societies we've been pretty much indoctrinated to feel. There has to be an expert or someone in charge, a hierarchy at the front of the room, who's telling you what to do. They're showing you what to do. There's that expertise, and you usually default to the person at the front of the room. Whereas when you're sharing in a circle, different people can come forward and speak and share from their experience, and you're actually sharing that leadership and sharing the experience and the expertise in that circle. It's no one person. It just really changes the dynamic, I guess. And the circle geometry of circle really promotes that safety and that trust and presence. You can't be on your phone, you can't be scribbling on a piece of paper. You have to sit, and you really need to be present when that circle is there. And it's very powerful. So that's a bit of background on the circles. And today, in education settings, they're used in many different settings that I have seen very successfully, particularly for resolving conflict. I don't really like saying conflict resolution because it's sort of putting the word conflict first, and energetically, I don't like that. So, resolving conflict, as in mending relationships or clarifying misunderstandings, is what it usually is. So, if there's arguments in the playground, and then you come in and you sit down and you have your restorative justice circle, often it all started from a misunderstanding and a breakdown in communication. And circles and sharing and hearing other people's perspectives really helps to clarify those misunderstandings and rebuild that trust. And no, it's not a magic wand. It doesn't happen overnight, but quite often it can really go a long way towards rebuilding that trust and clearing the air, I guess, rather than a he said, she said, talking to the expert in the room. So if you really wanted to try and have one of these circles, then you really need to create that safe space. There has to be clear rules. I'm very strict on the rules because you really need to set the boundaries, and the ch children, particularly young children, they don't know until you actually set the boundaries. So there's no interrupting when someone else is talking. You cannot talk over top of them and interrupt them. When you're talking, you really need to speak from the heart. You really need to speak the truth and really speak from the heart space, not the mind space. And whilst you might think, oh, children don't know how to do that, actually they do. They get it because you model it. You can feel the difference between someone who's working and talking in their head space, just only logic, to the heart, which is the empathy and the feeling and the caring and that connection. And the other rule that I have in circles is to listen with respect. The word respect is one that's also undervalued these days, and goes back to, Knights of the Round Table for me. You have to stop and honor and respect other people and give them the respect to actually allow them to express how they feel. And expression and feeling heard is a part of the breakdown in our society, in my opinion. So feeling heard is vital in circle time. So listening with respect is a definite rule that I would have. So we get rid of all distractions, no interrupting, speaking from the heart, speaking your truth from the heart, from your perspective, and then listening with respect. Talking objects are actually great as a tool, particularly if you're getting started. And I don't always use a talking object, but they really help settle and focus. And it also is the transference of power of the person who is doing the talking. So when you have something physical, I've used a shell in the past. I really love shells, though. but you can use a stone or a stick or a soft toy, perhaps, or a really soft little ball. Something that they pass from speaker to speaker helps anchor that, particularly for the younger children. And usually, when you sit in a circle, you have some sort of opportunity for every single person to go around and speak. That's really vital that every single person has that chance to open their mouths and share and express before you even start. Sometimes, it could be an I sentence, how you're feeling, for example. Neuroscience actually shows that when you name or name your emotion that you're feeling, it flips something in your brain, and then it owns that emotion, and it takes the power from that emotion away. Even if you're bored or tired or angry, naming that emotion actually does help neurologically. But just going around the circle, even if it's just one word, it can be on, I'm feeling this, and then everybody sort of goes around, and it can be anything. That's just an example. Stories. So story time, as we know, is absolutely embedded in our culture across the planet, and it's also how we learn, and it's how our brains make connections. And it's not only connecting to our mind and our memories, it's also connecting to our heart space. So the use of stories is very powerful in restorative, resolution or resolving conflict situation. Then usually the person who is harmed or perceives that they've been harmed will explain what happened. They're going to tell their story, and everybody else listens, and then they're able to respond when the talking object comes to them, and they're able to share their piece. Of course, the responsibility and the impact is that the children can share how whatever it is that happened affected them. And sometimes, for the person who did the wrong, who caused the harm, whatever it is that they did might not have realized the impact it has on other people, which is very valuable for them to listen and hear, and absorb that. And then, of course, then you go around and you offer solutions. Students can propose ways to possibly repair the relationship or prevent the issue from happening again. And that's a really valuable conversation, because all of them are problem solving. And often, in my experience, if you do this over a prolonged period of time and use these circles, the children start having and using this conversation in the playground in real time, and you don't need to get to circle time, because they're starting to learn the language of proposing ways to negotiate, I guess, is what you could say, and prevent that harm from even happening. And I've seen this many, many times. I've seen it in primary schools, and I've seen it in secondary schools, but only in the instance where they're used to circles and they're used to these conversations being modeled to them. So the asking this people in the circle, children in the circle, adults in the circle, whoever it happens to be, to share or offer a solution, if they have something to bring forth. This, I find, also helps to balance the introverts and the extroverts. The extroverts who, love to talk sometimes without thinking, they just love to talk and they just want to get in there. And the introverts often have time to sit and listen to what everyone else has to say, and then still process and then bring forth what they want to share. So in my classroom, I always allowed the children that I knew needed that processing time. I would make sure that I start the talking stick, or we start the talking stick, at a place where they are not first. And they knew, because I would always have a sideline conversation with them outside of the circle, that if they weren't ready to speak yet, they just needed to say, when the talking stick came to them, or the talking shell it was, they just needed to say, "I pass, but please come back to me," if they felt like they had something they wanted to share, but they just needed more time. And so, as it went around the circle, it would always go back to them, and often they would be, one of the last to speak. And this really honoured and valued the way that they needed to communicate. and they felt like they were also included and it wasn't suiting just one style of learning. And of course, some of the introvert or extroverts who just wanted to have their say and talk over top of everybody had to learn to have that self-control. No, breathe. You've had your chance to speak, or you will get your chance to speak. It's time to listen, which is a valuable lesson, particularly for young children to learn at the same time. And I can tell you that because I'm one of those kids. I could talk underwater, seriously, literally can talk underwater. Anyway, and the final part of these types of circles, restoring any type of conflict, would be in an agreement and in closing. So the group really co-creates a simple plan. This is what's going to happen moving forward. We always end with some sort of gratitude, and something positive about each other. So sharing something positive about each other, either depending on the time, something positive about the situation, or actually physically about each other, which is a really lovely way to share. Some classes that I have taught over the years really wanted to have, they would hug each other or they'd high five each other. They wanted to have that physical contact because I think physical touch was the love language of a lot of the children in those classes. And then there are some years where there are children that just didn't want that at all. You adapt, you adopt, you have this conversation because these sorts of processes I usually develop with the class. I give them suggestions, we discuss it as the class, we trial it, and then we tweak it as we go and we really make it our own. So then, as the group, they own it. And when they're in that circle, they really take it seriously because it's not something that's been imposed on them. We developed it together. And that is absolutely vital, not just up today, we're doing this, sit down, you're doing this. Now you say this, now you say this. This is the way that it's been in many schooling situations. And it's not going to work as effectively if that's the way that it is approached, I guess. The benefits for these circles that I've used for many years is it really reduces the punitive discipline, I guess. It really teaches that ownership and that empathy and that problem solving. The problem solving is very valuable. I've seen that time and time again, because it's not coming from me as an adult. The children often choose their own punishment and they take it and they own it. And it gives every child a voice, even the quiet students, which is just gold, in my opinion. It's amazing. So in schooling settings, I've also used circles for decision making. We're going to sit in a circle, we need to project plan, we've got something that we're going to do. Let's have a meeting. Let's talk about the purpose. Let's have an ideas round. Let's share our thoughts. Let's go around again. Do we have clarifying questions? And you don't have to always go around in the circle. It can be just sitting in the circle. There's no judgment. Clarifying questions of people's ideas. Now let's discuss the pros and cons of what the project is. What's the impact going to be? What are the benefits going to be? And then usually it's a what's our preference? Let's do a thumbs up, or maybe they have token. They might have a red token, a green token, or a yellow token that they can put in front of them in the floor, and then that's almost like a voting, I guess. So push your token forward of how you're feeling. The orange might be undecided. I'm not decided yet. I need more information. The red is a no, I don't agree with this, and the green is a yes, I'm all for this. I like the way the conversation's going. The visual and the colours is very effective, even with adults, particularly when you have orange, because then you say, okay, everyone with orange, do you have a question? Do you have something you'd like to share? Can you share your perspective, why you don't agree at this stage, and why you're sitting on the fence? And then that gets more rich discussion, which is amazing. And then, of course, the group decides to come with a consensus, and it's usually the majority's choice. Depending on the class practice, it's always been a little bit different over the years, and it's something for you to negotiate. What's the magic number? Does it have to be 100% consensus? Does it need to be the majority? So on and so forth. And then from there, the decision-making circles then start to plan the roles. Who's going to do what? What are we going to do? And then the circle usually then breaks up into action groups and then off they go. But the decision-making circles is a very valuable tool to use. Same with well-being and connection circles, you know, your morning check-ins, your morning circles or circles of gratitude, story time, if you want to sit and talk with stories and sit in circles. You can sit on the carpet, you can sit in chairs. I like to go outside on the grass, plenty of room there, go under the trees and sit in a circle. But learning and inquiry circles are amazing, particularly for critical thinking. If the children are watching a stimulus or reading something and then sitting in circles and exploring their open-ended questions, I could go on and on and on. And I know I'm running out of time, unfortunately. So I'm going to leave it there. And I think I will come back and revisit this conversation another time because there's still so much to share. So thanks, everybody, for joining me on All Learning Reimagined. And until next week, explore, experience, express, go out and live learning.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this. The future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system. We are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.